It occurs to me that we are living in a time, and I just want to start out and teach a little bit, and I'm going to go wherever I go. But it occurs to me that we are living in a time of great skepticism. To you that are younger, that may be the only time you've ever recognized, so this may be norm to you. But I remember a time when we used to believe in some things. I remember a time when we walked past each other in the street and we spoke. I remember a time that we would help the old ladies in the house with their groceries. I remember a time that the neighbors would look out for each other's kids. We used to believe in something. I remember a time that we were more patriotic and less political. We used to believe in something. I remember a time that we would go to the doctor, and if the doctor gave us medicine, we would take the medicine as prescribed just because we believed in something. The time has come today that it seems like skepticism is so pervasive that truth is hard to find. A solid, concrete belief system that we can all embrace and agree on becomes difficult over the smallest things. We don't believe in science, no matter how educated, no matter how many tests and evidence is brought before us, we don't believe in science. Then some folk believe in science, they don't believe in God. No matter how God moves and how many times he blesses, they don't believe in God. We don't believe in systemic racism, no matter how many videos we see. There are still some people that still refuse to believe. They're willfully blind. They're conveniently blind. They're blind because the blindness makes them comfortable. We choose to be blind. We don't believe in institutions anymore. We have our own form of religion. We have reduced God down to the universe, failing to recognize that God created the universe. We now worship the creation more than the creator, and we pray to the things God made rather than to the God that made them. We used to believe in something. We used to have some ideals and creeds. Even secular people believed in something. Used to be, people would be cussing until they got to the church, and they get to the church and stop cussing, because even though they weren't in the church, they believed in something. But today we are in a time of skepticism. Everything is met with a challenge. If we say police brutality, you come along and say, oh, no, we don't believe 99% are good. No, nothing to back it up. That's just a percent. You just pull that out of your head. You choose to believe. No tests done. No facts necessary. 99%. Okay. We used to believe in something. I'm not saying there aren't many good police officers, but 99%. We don't believe videos. We don't believe tapes. We don't believe anything. If we talk about injustice, you come back with immunity. We used to believe in something. We used to coalesce around something, a constitution. We used to believe in the constitution. Now we bend it and twist it to serve the political image that we want to create. The constitution is irrelevant. It's who wins or loses, no matter how we have to scheme or cheat to get it. We used to believe in something. It's a hard job to preach anymore, because preaching is based on faith, and faith has gone out of style, and it's hard to pastor a church because we don't believe. My mama said, you don't believe snakes crawl. They don't believe in anything. They don't believe in parents. They don't believe in structure. They don't believe in respect. They don't believe in order. People have babies, leave them in a trash can. They don't believe in raising children. We used to believe in something. We're living in an era of skepticism. Truth is optional. It's your opinion. It's whatever you choose for it to be. Alternative truths, alternative realities. We used to believe in something. You used to be that you could enter into an agreement, and the Bible said the giving of an oath was the end of all strife. But now you're not even saved with a contract. We don't believe anymore. And now I have to admit, I'm not shocked that unbelievers don't believe. That's why they are unbelievers. we're always preaching against sin. Sin's not really the issue. Unbelief is really the prevailing issue. We like to talk about the habits, like if you became more moral, you would be saved, but you can be moral and still go to hell. The gateway into the kingdom is belief. If you don't believe, you can't get in the kingdom. The criteria of being in the kingdom is to be a believer. It's to be a believer. I'm not shocked when people are unbelievers and they don't believe and they laugh at the gospel and they're trolls on the internet and they say all kinds of stuff. But I'm shocked sometimes to recognize that the skepticism that was outside the boat has crept through the pores of the boat. Somehow it has filtered through the pitch and got inside the ark, and now the church is talking like the world, and the world is talking like the church. The world is talking more about believe, and the church is skeptical. Skeptical of each other, skeptical of leadership, skeptical of organized religion, skeptical of everything, skeptical of anything, skeptical of God. Prove to me that there's a God. God doesn't have to be proven, he must be revealed. God never required that we prove him. He's not a science. We can't put him in a petri dish. We can't show him up under a microscope, because then you would need faith, and the criteria is faith. So God doesn't explain himself. He just is. He that cometh to God must first believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him, You must first believe that he is. If you don't believe that he is, you can't come to him. Yeah, he won't prove it to you. He won't argue it out. You have to believe. Look a minute at John chapter 3, verse 14 through 18. I want to take a look at this scripture. I think it is important. I'm going to look at it. And as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so must the Son of Man be lifted up. Mm-hmm. That this is a blank check written on faith, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish. Not whosoever tithes, whosoever gives, whoever can sing, whoever can preach, whoever goes to Bible study, whosoever believeth in him should not perish. All those things are good, but the criteria is believing. Whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have eternal life. Come on. For God so loved, God so, the infinite God, so to the infinite greed, love, the infinite power, the world, the infinite crisis, that he gave the infinite sacrifice, his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. Come on. For God sent not his Son into the world to condemn the world. God is not a police officer waiting to arrest you for a speeding ticket. God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world. He's not waiting to execute you. God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. Come on. He that believeth on him is not condemned, but he that believeth not is condemned already. I don't care what you do. I don't care what you give. I don't care what you buy. I don't care how you serve. I don't care how you smile. He that believeth not is condemned already because he have not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God. That's what God is mad about. You didn't believe in the name of the only begotten Son. The whole issue is about belief. It's about belief. It's about belief. It's about belief. This spirit of skepticism that has attacked our generation, has attacked our age, has led to unnecessary death, unnecessary murder, unnecessary pain, the annulling of institutions, the lack of solidarity, the accentuation of instability and anxiety, because when you don't have a truth to anchor yourself to, you're just floating around in the sea of an abyss of ideas, each one contesting the other one. It has led to arguments and fightings and murders and killings and shootings and arguing over turf, because there is no truth to anchor us. Truth anchors the soul. Truth holds us down. Truth opens up revelation. Truth opens up doors. It is about believing. It's about believing. Faith is the currency of heaven. It's what it is to heaven what money is to earth. It's what God uses to transact business. Abraham believed God, and it was counted unto him as righteousness. God said, I know you're not righteous, but if you believe me, I'll take the faith and give you righteousness that you did not earn. I'll impute righteousness unto you. I'll impart righteousness unto you. It's an exchange because you believe. He that believeth shall be saved. He that believeth not is condemned already because he has not believed on the only begotten Son. So if I were Satan, if I set out to destroy you, if I set out to kill you, I wouldn't spend a lot of energy fighting your morality, fighting your mentality, fighting your anxiety. I would come against your faith. Because without faith, it is impossible to please God. No matter how talented you are, if you don't believe him, it is impossible to please God. It's impossible to work for God if you don't believe him. It's impossible to build a ministry if you don't believe. It's impossible to preach if you don't believe. If you don't believe God, you can't do business with God, because faith is the currency of heaven. It is the substance of the thing I hope for. It is the evidence of things I don't see. It's a currency, you get it? It's exchange, like money, I can't eat it. Money, I can't sleep in it. Money, I can't live under it. But I can give it in exchange for goods and substances. It's written on it. It's an exchange medium. Faith is an exchange medium. So if I was Satan and I wanted to bankrupt you, it wouldn't be enough to take your money. If I take your faith, I've left you bankrupt. If I take your faith, I've left you poverty stricken. If I take your faith, you got nothing to buy with. If I take faith, prayer don't have a leg to stand on. If I take faith, you can't have no peace. If I take faith, you can't have no joy. If I take faith, you can't have no victory. If I take faith, you don't have no power. If I take faith, you don't have no confidence. If I take faith, you don't have no boldness. If I have faith, you don't have no conviction. If I take your faith, you don't have no trust. If I take your faith, you don't have no comfort when you're grieving. If I take your faith, you're powerless, impotent, weak, incapable, irreconcilable differences. Your lack of faith insults God. It insults God. To not believe God is an insult. It is to suggest that maybe he's lying. Your lack of faith is an insult to God. Abraham became a friend of God because he believed him. Do you hear what I'm saying to you? I want you to understand how important faith is. Because if you don't understand how important faith is, then you won't understand the magnitude of this text. I must admit, this text comes at a bad time. Like all trials to your faith always come at a bad time. Trials to your faith don't come at a good time. Trials to your faith don't come when all your bills are paid, when you got a nice job and you got a nice car and you got a nice home and everything. Trial to your faith doesn't come there. Trial to your faith comes when all hell's breaking loose. Everything you was leaning on is given away. You're uncertain and insecure and vulnerable. That's when the trial to your faith has come. In our text, we are in the middle of a crisis. It is a faith crisis. No bombs have fallen. No plagues have been released. No disaster is depicted. No chaos is obvious, but yet it is a faith crisis, because these 12 men who started out walking with Jesus believed him. They walked off their jobs and believed him. They walked away from their families and believed him. They walked away from the familiar and they believed him. They traveled for miles by foot following Jesus because they believed him. They thought they understood him. They thought he was bringing the kingdom. They thought he would overthrow the Roman Empire. They thought he would be their king on earth. They thought that they would get a seat beside him. They thought they would make up his parliament. They thought they would make up his Congress. They thought they would have positions of power. They followed him. And halfway through the process, he started talking this strange talk that made them stare at one another. Talking about, if you destroy the temple in 3 days, I'll raise it again. Except a grain of wheat fall into the ground and die, to abide alone. But if it die, it bring forth much fruit. Why is he talking about death? Why is he keep talking about death? What's he talking about? What's he talking about? What's he talking about dying? Why is he talking about dying? He kept talking about dying. Why is he talking about dying? Death was not in their plan. It was not in their perspective. It was not in their purview. It was not in their preparation. It was not in their understanding. They didn't understand why Jesus kept talking about death. They heard him murmuring about it in the Garden of Gethsemane. Out there in the woods, looked like he was talking to himself. Father, if it be thy will, pass this bitter cup from me. Not my will, but thine be done. And there in the Garden of Gethsemane, where his soul was pressed until blood drops came out of the pores of his skin, they watched him, didn't understand him, fell asleep, confused about him, and he was murmuring about death. He was murmuring about death, and the pressure was mounting, and the politics were mounting, and the Pharisees were against him, and the Sadducees were against him, but they weren't afraid because Jesus had power. They'd seen him walk on water. They had seen him heal the sick. They had seen him raise the dead. They had seen him turn water into wine. They had seen him open up the blinded eyes of Bartimaeus. They knew that he had power. Yet, when they apprehended Jesus, he opened not his mouth. He didn't say a word. He let them take him. He didn't have to let them take him. He had spoken one time, and the ground knocked them to the ground. I that speak of me, and the ground had knocked them over. He had the power. He could have resisted, but he didn't do anything. He turned into this lamb-like individual that they were not familiar with, and he didn't say a mumbling word, and they drug him around like he was a little boy. From judgment hall to judgment hall, they snatched him around. They beat him like he was a slave until his entrails were hanging inside out. And then after they had whipped him, they put a cross on his back and made him carry the cross outside of the city to a place called Golgotha. And there on Golgotha's hill, he had to carry the cross up the hill like a slave toward a peak at the top of the mountain where there was so much uncertainty that nobody knew for sure what was going to happen, but it did not look good. Most of the disciples ran away. Peter, he went to cussing, saying, I was never with him. I was never with him. I was not with him, because Peter was afraid, and rightfully so, because they were getting ready to kill Jesus. They were getting ready to kill Jesus. And now push had come to shove. Only one disciple said, I'm going to die with him. And that was Thomas. Thomas said, we must go. I must go and die with him. Thomas. Yeah. Thomas. I know you call him Doubting Thomas. You got a name for everybody. But he wasn't always Doubting Thomas. He had been confirmed and convinced and committed in his faith. And he had believed Jesus. And he was prepared to go to Jerusalem to die with Jesus. But the pressure was mounting. And it got worse. And they beat him so bad he wasn't recognizable. They stripped him of his clothing. And he went like a lamb to the shears, and he never fought back, and he never said anything, and he didn't do any of those miraculous things they had seen him do over and over again. It was as if he had lost his power. And he laid down on the cross. No man took his life. He laid down on a wooden cross, and they nailed his hands to the cross, and blood spewed out like a water fountain. The Roman soldiers lift high the hammer and slammed it down on the nail, and blood flew everywhere. And again, they swung it down again, and blood flew everywhere. They crossed his feet together, I believe symbolic of the Jews and Gentiles come together up under one gospel. They put them all together and boom, they slammed it down again. And once they had got him fastened, affixed firmly to a wooden cross, a cross that he had made himself, a cross he had created, a mountain he had hollowed out, they lifted him up on the cross and they hung him high. They stretched him wide, and there the Savior of the universe lay on the cross, stripped naked, powerless, impotent, murmuring, almost sounding delirious, uttering things that made no sense. I thirst. Talking to his mother, behold, our son, behold, my mother, changing languages. Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, my God, why hast thou forsaken? Can you imagine what it would be like to be a disciple of Jesus and hear Jesus say, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, my God, why hast thou forsaken? Why should I stay if God left? Their faith had come to a crushing blow, a crisis and uncertainty. What in the world are we going to do? How do I go back home and tell him that maybe he wasn't who I thought he was? And maybe he couldn't do what I thought he could do. I saw him do it, but then when he needed to do it most, he didn't do it. What? How am I going to tell? How do I get my old job back? How do I explain to my wife why I spent 3 years falling around somebody who died like a criminal on a cross? And most of the disciples ran to a room and hid because they said if they killed our pastor, they'll kill us too. They locked themselves up in a room and I heard that Judas hung himself in the potter's field. They didn't go see, but it was rumored that he had committed suicide. And there were rumors that suggest somebody might have broken into his grave and taken his body. And Thomas had decided, I don't know about this. I don't know. I don't know what to think. I don't know what to believe. I don't know where to go. I don't know what to say. Why didn't he do something? Why didn't he stop it? Why didn't he stop it? Why didn't he stop it? Why did he let this happen? Why did he let this happen to himself? Why did he let this happen to me? Why did he let this happen to me? If you've ever had a faith crisis, this is the way you talk. Why did he, if God was on my side, why did mama die if God was on my side? Why did my daughter die if God was on my side? Why did I lose my job if God, I don't know. Maybe it's not real. Maybe it doesn't work. Maybe it's not true. Skepticism has leaked into the boat. Skepticism has come into the room. Skepticism has invaded the premise. That's why when Jesus got up from the grave and he came to the room where 10 disciples were, one was dead, committed suicide, and the other one was stuck in skepticism. The 10 were locked up for fear of the Jews. They had not lost their faith, but they were afraid of the Jews. And the Bible said that when Jesus came to the room, he came through the door, right through the door, and appeared unto them in the room. I know they thought, oh God, this is a ghost, but then he ate fish, and spirits can't eat. Spirit enough to go through the door, and man enough to eat fish on the inside. Holy God could do things like this. But the problem was, he did it while Thomas was gone. Thomas was not in the room when Jesus first showed up. He was out someplace trying to figure out whether he should believe or not. And maybe I shouldn't go back to that church. And maybe I shouldn't be into that because this is not working. And I might get killed. And I don't know where I fit because I can't go back to Jerusalem and I don't fit in the upper room. And I want to talk to somebody who feels like you don't fit anywhere. And you're too much of the world to be in the church, and yet you're too much of the church to be in the world, and so you pace back and forth because you don't fit anywhere, and you believe sort of, but you got some doubt and you got some worry, and your faith is in a crisis. Your faith is in a crisis. You think your life is in a crisis? No. You think your money's in a crisis? No. You think your family's in a crisis? No! That's all what the devil is using. Your faith is in a crisis. And having your faith in a crisis is what Jesus had warned Peter about. He told Peter, you remember? He said, Satan has desired to have you that I might sift you, that he might sift you as wheat. But I prayed for you. That your faith fail you not. I didn't pray that you wouldn't fail. In fact, before the cock crows, you're going to deny me three times. And I didn't even pray about that. I prayed that your faith fail you not.